Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Nico Nico Nico, but as always, you can call me Nico. I have an interesting relationship with Spyro the Dragon 2 Ripto's Rage. I know that sounds like the opening to a very sad therapy session, but please try to bear with me. It was one of my first video games, this and HBO Boxing were my life when I was younger. But I never ended up beating the game. If I played it all the time, how was that possible? I never had a memory card. To all you Zoomers out there who've never heard of this memory card, imagine instead of being able to save your game on your console or the cloud, you had to plug in a USB with like an entire JPEG's worth of space on it and then save to that. Insanity? Yes, but it was a limitation we dealt with at the time. The other option was passcodes, and God did those start getting long as time went on. Ripto's Rage was always too long to beat in one sitting, and despite my mediocre speedrunning attempts, I could only make it to around Scorch before my parents made me shut the PS1 off. So when I decided to sit down and play through the full game this week, I was happy to discover the latter half of the game was just about as magical as the first. To be fair, some of those later robot levels were really phoning it in, but I digress. I defeated Ripto and finally accomplished a lifelong goal, reaching Dragon Shores. What a cute little level. It basically serves as a little dev room for post-game players to explore, see models of characters you've grown to love, and even get a chance to dunk a few unkillable enemies. Younger me would have lost his mind. Suddenly, as I was leaving, I noticed a door. On it, it said 64 orbs, 10,000 gems. A 100% completion to open one more door. Well, you can bet I channeled my inner child and stayed up all night. I played through each level, picking up spare gems and finding each orb I left behind. It was an odd feeling. I went to some of my favorite levels for one last run-through, collecting the last few gems needed for my completion bonus. I went and finally tackled some of the harder challenges I avoid in normal runs, like anything to do with that brain-dead scientist who just loves to get smashed by golems. I even ended up playing my least favorite parts of the game, the speedways, and I come to find out there are more secret orbs in each one. The game incentivized me to explore everything it had to offer, and I walked away with a newfound sense of appreciation for everything the game had, not just my favorite bits of it. When I was finally done, I made my way to the final door. This was a moment that, in a funny way, my whole life had led up to. I opened it, and inside was a flame power-up. Just your average flame breath upgrade in a black void. I was confused at first, and I was more confused when I walked through and there was no timer like usual. Until I finally realized, the game gave me a permanent power-up as a completion reward. This is the single ultimate prize. Especially in a game as simple as Spyro, where just getting a ground pound was a monumental task, getting a permanent and game-breaking upgrade to your moveset changes the entire way you view a game. And that's the most interesting thing I found when a game gives you an endgame power-up, the change in perspective. Perspective is something that's not commonly talked about in regards to game design, but you've no doubt noticed it. Maybe the simplest example is a mirror mode, where the entire game is flipped on its y-axis and you have to reorient yourself on a familiar stage. This is commonly found in racing games, but apparently it's also in platformers like Ratchet & Clank Future. New Game Plus accomplishes a similar goal. Playing through the first level of a game is usually a tutorial followed by a small challenge to test what the player has learned so far. But give the players all their stats and items, maybe buff the enemies or add new ones, and suddenly, it's a fun romp through a familiar area of the game. Again, two experiences for almost the price of one. But these examples of perspective change pale in comparison to the huge endgame changes a lot of the 5th and 6th generation games gave to players. This generation liked to give huge endgame rewards that totally changed the way you view the rest of the game. For example, the original Metal Gear Solid either gave you invisibility or unlimited ammo depending on your ending. For a stealth action game, these were massive rewards, and for a kid with minimum income, it meant you got to play through the game all over again, in a totally unique way that let you play how you wanted to. Another of my favorite examples is Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which let you play as two new characters as a reward. This was a game that invented the term Metroidvania. It was already huge, had a secret mirror mode on the X-axis, and still had the time to add two characters with completely different movesets to the original game. One endgame power-up I don't think people give enough credit to comes from Mario Galaxy. I'm a huge fan of this game. In fact, they have another example of perspective change in Luigi, but that's not what I want to focus on. The entire game revolves around the hub world. It takes a while, but as more and more of the levels get unlocked, the area begins to light up. It goes from a drab and almost dead area to bustling with these soft lights surrounded by beautiful stars and lumas. Coupled with the absolutely gorgeous story by Rosalina, that hub world starts to hold special meaning to players, including myself. Then, suddenly, one trip back to the hub world late in the game, you get the option to go back to the tutorial world. It's a cute area, and it brings back fond memories of when you began your adventure. Making your way to the tower, you get a small cutscene with Rosalina. Afterwards, a small Luma gives you a challenge: collect 100 purple coins floating in the air. To do so, the game gives you the best power-up a platformer can give you: flight. Absolutely unrestricted flight, barring a time limit. This tiny and simple world suddenly changes, and you go on this magical and low-stakes glide through the tutorial area. You see it in a totally different perspective. Maybe it was the new outfit, maybe it was the music, maybe it was because it's just so strange to see a game revolving around platforming, especially an iconic one like Mario, totally removing gravity's restriction. Whatever it was, this moment was special to me. And your reward for completing this task? You get to fly around the hub world. It's minor compared to Spyro 2's power-up, but for some reason, almost every time I completed a world, I celebrated by flying around the hub world. There wasn't really a point to it, there was no gameplay incentive to doing it. You didn't unlock some new aspect to the story. The game just, well, it gave you a new toy. And yeah, that's probably what was so nice about it. Felt like the game was giving me a new toy to play with. It has a real Christmas morning feel to it. My perspective of the hub world went from dark and unwelcoming to bright and beautiful as the game progressed. The great thing about the game letting you fly through it is that it recognized that. It knew. It planned for it. The game designers wanted you to feel this way and gave you a reward when you were fully realizing it. Out of every piece of this game, I ended up remembering this unimportant power-up the most. This was such a great moment in gaming. I honestly wrote a game doc right after for a platformer all about helping different worlds and then unlocking flight after you complete each level, just because this moment inspired me so much. This is all to say that the endgame power-ups are a chance for the developers to hand over the reins to the player a bit. It's not giving you God mode, as that might ruin your immersion, but they're recognizing the love you've put back into their art and are trying to reward you for enjoying it. I think it really goes to show the amount of care a development team has for their art, and it's one of the few things that stood out to me about a relatively recent release named Balan Wonderworld. Headed by Yuji Naka of Sonic the Hedgehog and Nights into Dreams fame, this was supposed to be a true next-generation platformer by an industry giant. He ended up getting a shot at making this dream game by Square Enix, but was told he only had one shot. A lot was riding on this. And after an unfortunate development hell, the game dropped. And it dropped hard. It's beyond bad. It's horrible. It might be beyond horrible, honestly. It's one of the single most badly, but also strangely designed games I've ever seen. The gameplay is an absolute nightmare. Not only can you not even jump without certain power-ups, but you have to grind for them if you don't want to lose them after taking damage once. The game has controls so brain-dead a four-year-old would feel insulted. The story is almost non-existent. It's insane how badly it's presented. You get a few cutscenes, vaguely, and I emphasize, vaguely, explaining what the theme of the level is about. Usually, there's some sort of trauma another character went through, but sometimes they really don't make sense at all. The fact that they're mimed doesn't help either. It's the aesthetics that really got to me, though. To be clear, some of these animations are god-awful, and for sure these cutscenes could be a lot clearer. But the look and music in the game is beautiful, and it's almost dreamlike in that I can tell they're supposed to imply some higher themes that the game just wasn't really capable of delivering. I went online and read through the Balan Wonderworld book that, for some reason, couldn't be included in the actual game, and I started to see some of the logic behind the more obtuse sequences, the setting, and even who Balan was and what he was supposed to represent. That depressed state of mind people find themselves lost in after traumatic events. After I did some more research into the game, I found there's actually an endgame power-up. Granted, it's locked behind some poorly made gameplay mechanics. Some are so complicated, I can't believe they didn't explain it at all in-game, and after a lot of work, you eventually get Balan's costume as the final power-up. This is another one where you get to fly over the level, and you think to yourself, oh, I get to skip playing this crap game then? And yeah, I get it, you're probably right. But when you stand above it all and try to see the vision behind the game, with the context behind the development and the story they wanted to tell but ultimately couldn't, you start to see the game not for what it is, but for what it wanted to be. It's the ultimate case of wasted potential, in my opinion, bigger than Spore. I don't even know if a mod fix for the controls and costume would fix the gameplay it's so broken, but I still see what Kondo wanted to present to the world. Thinking about how much was on the line and how hard the game flopped, I went from being in awe at the visuals to a distinct sadness. I feel like we all just kind of glossed over the fact that this was a dream project that blew up worse than the Hindenburg. Imagine if the game you waited to make your whole life turned out like this, I'd be sick. In the end, I only learned this because I researched this video, because of Spyro 2 giving me a present for 100%ing the game in the form of a power-up. Now playing the game, I don't have to worry about unkillable enemies or difficult bosses because the game basically gave me a retirement present. I can just spam Fire Blasts and enjoy what I want from the game. And while I was doing that, hey, guess what? I found out there's hidden skill points in the game for me to find. Yeah, after all that, the game still found a way to give players a little bit more after they were done. That there is love for your art, for your medium, and for your players. It shows how much life a creator is willing to put into a game world, and how much they want people to escape into their fantasy. This simple power-up took me on a journey of finding new perspective, not only on games I've loved, but on a game I think we've all written off as horrible. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite power-up, please let me know in the comments. This has been Nico, and I hope you all have a lovely evening.